So I have a confession to make. I am a hopeless romantic and I love romance novels. At an earlier place in my life, I looked upon this genre disparagingly. I was basically an intellectual snob, but I am in recovery now. When COVID hit, my husband and I had just moved to this area and knew no one here. I needed something happy in my life. I've always been a pretty avid reader, and I turned to reading romance novels. Apparently, I'm not alone in my enthusiasm for this genre. In a recent New York Times article, I learned that print sales of romance novels more than doubled during the pandemic and haven't slowed since. There's also a boom in romance bookstores. I've even found a few fellow lovers of romances here at UUCL. Early in the pandemic, I stumbled onto Diana Gabaldon's Outlander series, and I was hooked. Outlander isn't a straight-up romance novel, but it was my gateway drug. I started listening to and reading romance novels frequently. I was surprised that many are quite well-written. Yes, they can be formulaic, with many common tropes, but at the time, I relished that. My book friends helped to lessen my loneliness during that time. One popular trope is the enemies to friends or lovers, a child's version of which we saw in Enemy Pie. Reading romance, I knew what to expect. Two people get together, have some kind of conflict or crisis, find love, and only by continuing to work on their relationship, live happily ever after. What I didn't expect was to actually learn lessons from the stories and characters that have helped me to become a better person. Though romance novels deal primarily with romantic love, these lessons can be applied in all types of relationships. These books often promote our first UU principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I've been collecting quotes that embody some of these lessons. I will share some of them with you to illustrate my points. Emily Henry's character, Gus, in her book, Beach Read, says something very poignant while talking to his romantic interest, January, who is a romance writer. He acknowledges the power of her romance stories when he says this: "When you love someone, you want to make the world look different for them, to give all the ugly stuff meaning and amplify the good. That's what you do for your readers, for me. You make beautiful things because you love the world. And maybe the world doesn't always look how it does in your books, but I think putting them out there, that changes the world a little bit, and the world can't afford to lose that. I've always admired that, the way your writing always makes the world seem brighter and the people a little braver. Or maybe sometimes people are braver and brighter than they know." The idea that books could make the world seem better and possibly be better than we realize is what gives these stories their power. In my extensive reading, certain themes or lessons keep occurring in book after book. I believe we could live happier and more fulfilled lives if we paid attention to some of those lessons. Here are five. 1, communication is important. Not sharing your problems or feelings or operating under assumptions leads to misunderstanding and heartache. Operating on assumptions rather than communication isn't very productive. It can be scary to share feelings and be vulnerable, but openness and honesty are the foundations of a solid relationship. Your assumptions might be totally wrong and should be checked out. The other person may feel just like you do and be afraid to express it. 2, accept and love people for who and what they are now, with all their weaknesses and faults, idiosyncrasies and weirdness. Let go of expectations of who or what a person might be and embrace who they are now. That's all we can really do. It's never a good idea to have fixing or changing someone on your agenda. Three, you are not your parents, and neither is everyone else. This is especially important if you had a particularly terrible parent. Don't let the fear that you are like them hold you back from what makes you happy. Just because your father was unfaithful, or your mother left, or vice versa, or your parents were emotionally unavailable, doesn't mean that you are like them and can't stay in a committed relationship. It also means that others are not your parents either. Don't paint all relationships with the brush of your parents. You are your own unique individual. Four, allow people to help you. You do not have to do everything all on your own. Usually when people offer to help, they mean it. Often they are sincerely happy to be helpful and just need to be asked. This can lead you to a community of people who are there for each other. Allow yourself to be embraced by others. Five. To me, the most important lesson I have seen in book after book is this, that by closing yourself off from others to protect yourself or other people, if you think that way, you are denying yourself a potentially wonderful human connection. Opening yourself up, allowing yourself to be vulnerable to others can lead to beautiful friendships or even love. You don't always need to wear your armor. In The Rules of Love by Lauren Blakely, the female protagonist has this conversation with her friend about not telling her love interest about her feelings. So you fell in love and are afraid to tell him, right? Yes, that's true, I admit. It's your armor, girl. That's what's holding you back. The question is, are you going to let it? Fear is often what keeps us from opening up. Fear of rejection, of being hurt, of being abandoned. In Ashes of You by Katherine Cowles, the male love interest says this in admiration to his girlfriend. Being scared doesn't make you weak, it makes you human. But you keep facing it head on. You could run, and I wouldn't blame you, but you stay. Not closing yourself off also means being there for others, listening without judgment, being a good friend. I've learned a lot from the interactions between friends in romance novels. There's usually a bestie the characters can lean on and lots of conversation. Get the slide. Can you put the slide? I loved and laughed about the idea of Alecto. Ask, listen, eye contact, top off. That's for the wine. A technique to use to get someone to open up. In A Blast from the Past by Lucy Score, the father of the female protagonist gave this advice to her love interest, Nick, and his friend, Kellen. No matter how obvious the solution is, no matter how easily you could explain how to fix it, no matter how much you want to take the care of the problem yourself, don't. Don't what? Kellen asked. Don't fix it. Don't tell her how to fix it. Don't tell her what you would do if you were in her shoes. Just don't. Nick frowned. Hang on. Are you saying we're just supposed to sit there and listen and not do anything about it? That's exactly what I'm saying, kid. I get that it sounds Looney Tunes, but trust me, it works. If you establish a rapport using Alecto, you cannot, under any circumstances, swoop in with a solution. Later in the book, we learn that the father got the whole idea of Alecto from his wife after many years of training. In talking to my husband about my ideas and sharing what I'd written, he remarked that these lessons are all about the difference between a growth and a fixed mindset. That was a light bulb moment for me. Of course, that's exactly what these lessons have in common. Next slide, yeah. What is a growth fix versus fixed mindset? These ideas come from the book, Mindset, The New Psychology for Success, How We Can Learn to Fulfill Our Potential by Carol S. Dweck. One central concept from Mindset is that the view you adopt for yourself profoundly affects the way you lead your life. She sums up a fixed mindset here. Believing that your qualities are carved in stone, the fixed mindset creates an urgency to prove yourself over and over. If you only have a certain amount of intelligence, a certain personality, a certain moral character, well, you better prove that you have a healthy dose of them. It simply wouldn't do to look deficient in these most basic characteristics. It also means that your image of yourself is that you are a certain way and can't be different. Here's what she says about a growth mindset. In this mindset, the hand you're dealt is just the starting point for development. This growth mindset is based on the belief that your basic qualities are things you can cultivate through your efforts. Although people may differ in every which way, in their initial talents and aptitudes, interests, or temperaments, everyone can change and grow through application and exercise. In his article, Why Mindset Matters in Relationships, Jonathan Adrian observed that the benefits of growth mindset stretch far beyond what is classically portrayed in article columns and motivational speeches, and transcends the landscape of education and careers. The fundamental laws of mindset are adaptable to virtually all aspects of life. One area that we most commonly overlook is relationships, which some people think holds implications that are far more profound. A fixed mindset holds the characters back from finding their happiness, as it does those of us in the real world. In many cases, one bad experience defines that person. They become stuck with the idea that they are a certain way, unworthy, unable to commit, not meant to be with anyone, or like their parents. It isn't until they let go of that mindset and realize that they don't really have to be stuck there, that they can find their happiness, they adopt a growth mindset. One single outcome does not need to define them. A setback is a starting point for the future, not a definition of them as a person. Most of us have a fixed mindset in at least some areas or times in our lives. Is that holding us back from being our best selves? By becoming aware of having a fixed mindset when it comes up, can we shift to a growth mindset and become more fulfilled? What are we really afraid of? With a growth mindset, it's okay to make mistakes. We can use them as a learning opportunity, not beat ourselves up about them. By shifting our perspective and adopting more of a growth mindset than a fixed one, we can lead happier, more fulfilled lives. The female protagonist in Saraya Wilson's book, Hypnotized by Love, has an important realization when she says, "This is no way to live. If I kept everyone at arm's length, yes, maybe I wouldn't get hurt, but I wouldn't get the joy of loving someone either." She is shifting from a fixed to a growth mindset here. Or, as one character said in Candy Steiner's book, Learn Your Lesson, well, sometimes bitterness can eat us alive, and everyone makes the choices that feel right to them. For some of us, that means blocking the source of what hurt us and never taking a risk again, a fixed mindset. For others, it means picking ourselves up, dusting ourselves off, and getting back on the horse, a growth mindset. It was a surprise to see the wonderful lessons embodied in romance novels. There was much more depth than I would have expected. UUCL's covenant starts, "Love is the spirit of our church." Love is not a finite commodity. The more we give, the more we have. If we adopt a growth mindset, we can allow more love into our lives, both giving and receiving it. Thank you. So please rise in body or spirit and join our UUCL band in singing "All You Need Is Love" by John Lennon and Paul McCartney. A note, this song was Britain's contribution to our world, the first live global television link in 1967, and was viewed by over 400 million people in 25 countries.